Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif blames intervention by outside powers for instability in the West Asia region. Sources close to Iran's Supreme National Security Council reject U.S. claims about indirect talks between Washington and Tehran on the nuclear deal. The Yemeni military launches a new air raid on Saudi Arabia in retaliation for the kingdom's aggression against the country. Greetings and a warm welcome to World News. Good to have you with us. Starting with comments by Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif, who is saying that intervention by outside powers is one of the main causes of instability in the West Asia region.
I do not intend to offer a long list of deficiencies. We all know them. Yet, we rarely look to the roots and causes. I believe there are three mega roots, namely international interventions, securitization, and prioritization. There can be no question that prolonged and dangerous international interventions in our region are one of the major reasons for existing troubles.
Zarif particularly criticized the United States for interfering in West Asia, blaming it for exacerbating the existing problems there, including insecurity. The top Iran diplomat said that the U.S. is meddling in the region to serve its interests. Zarif also referred to U.S. sanctions against the Iranian people and called the coercive measures an economic war. He stressed that diplomacy has to be taken more seriously to manage differences and resolve issues.
The second Tehran Dialogue Forum was held virtually, but the messages were as strong as last year's. Foreign ministers of Iran, Turkey, and Afghanistan discussed the latest major issues in the Middle East, from terrorism to the U.S. destabilizing presence in the region. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif made the opening speech, where he touched on the U.S. intervention in the region, saying Washington has spent billions of dollars on its military sector only to perpetuate insecurity in the region.
The U.S. has exacerbated the insecurity and instability of this region more than any other region. As its own figures suggest, some $7 trillion have been wasted on forever wars and military interventions in this region.
Zarif also censured the U.S. for keeping its anti-Iran sanctions amid the pandemic, calling the measures an economic war waged against the Iranian people.
U.S. coercive economic measures directed against the Iranian people, especially at a time of pandemic, are nothing less than economic warfare. And as we now witness, there has been yet no difference in following a failed policy of the so-called maximum pressure between the former and the current U.S. presidents.
Echoing Zarif's remarks, Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu also rejected the unilateral U.S. sanctions against Iran, saying Ankara supports a U.S. return to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and its full implementation.
From the very beginning, we have stood alongside Iran against unilateral sanctions. And Turkey has always supported the full implementation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Now we support the new U.S. administration's declared intention to return to the deal. And we are hopeful that a mutually acceptable formula will be found to revive the JCPOA.
Afghan Foreign Minister Hanif Atmar was another diplomat at the virtual meeting who said his country should not become a safe haven for terrorists.
It's important for the region and for the outside world to realize the fact that outside problems should not be fought over on Afghan soil.
Tehran Dialogue Forum held its first edition last year with the presence of senior officials and heads of research institutes from different countries. The aim is to discuss views on major developments in sensitive areas, including the Persian Gulf and West Asia.
It seems that the trilateral meeting boils down to a single message. Three major countries in the region, Iran, Turkey, and Afghanistan, believe that it's time for the U.S. to stop its problematic behavior in West Asia. They say it can start by leaving the region and its people alone. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Now, an Iranian security source has rejected remarks by White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan about indirect talks between Iran and the U.S. over the 2015 nuclear deal. The source close to Iran's Supreme National Security Council told Press TV that the country has not held any informal talks with the U.S. about its return to the multilateral agreement. The sources stressed that no dialogue will take place before the U.S. lifts all the sanctions against Iran. On Monday, the Iranian Foreign Ministry also said that Tehran won't engage in any direct or indirect negotiations with Washington about any issue. Last week, Sullivan said that the U.S. is in touch with its European and other allies to get to know Iran's position about the nuclear agreement. The administration of President Biden wants Iran to return to full compliance with the deal before re-entering it. In other news, Britain has announced plans to increase its stockpile of nuclear weapons, citing emerging threats to its commitments to reduce warheads. A UK government review of defense, security, and foreign policy says that the country will raise the number of warheads up to 260. This is despite the UK being a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which commits it to a gradual nuclear disarmament under international law. Britain had previously been committed to cutting its stockpile to 180 warheads by mid-2020s. Campaigners that seek to promote nuclear disarmament have warned that the UK is at risk of starting a new nuclear arms race by increasing the size of its nuclear stockpile. Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Maqdad has slammed the occupation of Syria by the U.S. and its allies.
I'm not speaking fiction. I'm speaking about the women and children who are present in Al-Hol camp in the northeast of Syria, something like, you would not believe, 65,000 women, children, and others who are taken hostages by the United States of America, which has invaded Syria.
Addressing a meeting of Tehran Dialogue Forum via video conference, Maqdad said that the United States and its allies supported terrorists that came from across the globe to destabilize Syria. He said that Daesh was also created and backed by Washington, which was well proved by statements from American officials themselves. The top Syrian diplomat noted that the U.S. established a coalition in order to attack Syria and threaten other regional countries. Maqdad also slammed Turkey for what it called its occupation of northwestern Syrian province of Idlib. He called for the unconditional withdrawal of Turkish forces from his country. Yemeni armed forces have carried out yet another air raid against Saudi Arabia in retaliation for its aggression against the country. A spokesman for the Yemeni army says that the Air Force has targeted an airbase in southwestern Saudi Arabia. Two drones have been used to attack King Khalid Air Base near the Yemeni border. No more details are made available about possible casualties or damage caused by the airstrike. Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission has once again sounded the alarm over what it calls the sharp rise of civilian deaths due to the increase of bomb blasts and expansional war fronts across the country. Amin Alamid reports.
Based on a report by Afghanistan's Independent Human Rights Commission, over 100 civilians, including women and children, were killed or wounded over the last 6 days alone. The rights body called international community to put pressure on both warring sides, mainly the Taliban, to reduce violence.
As our findings show, 13 civilians, including women and children, were killed and 93 others were wounded due to rising violence across the country only over the past 6 days. Therefore, we seriously call on the international community and other rights bodies to do whatever they can to put an end to misery of war-weary Afghans.
This comes as both the Afghan government and the Taliban accuse each other of targeting civilians, but facts on the ground show that terrorist groups such as Daesh and Taliban are responsible for much of civilian casualties.
There are multiple reasons in civilian casualties, such as terrorist attacks, the proxy wars, or unknown elements that are still in equations. But the war in Afghanistan is a complicated and bloody as ever. People are still dying, life is still being torn apart, and the nation, global powers, most importantly, the people of Afghanistan are being drawn further into a situation that is hard to see a way of it.
However, the NATO troops are also accused of targeting civilian gatherings, such as wedding parties and religious events. This comes as despite all political attempts to bring stability to Afghanistan, this is the Afghans who rarely bear the brunt of violence. Local Afghans say they welcome any agreement that leads the country to calm and security.
Afghan civilians lose their lives on a daily basis while the country's peace process is going to enter a new phase. The launch of separate summits in Russia and Turkey to discuss the fate of the peace process. Will those conferences bring peace to Afghanistan? Let's wait and see. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Friends has justified the suspension of the AstraZeneca vaccine rollout, citing a higher than normal number of blood clot cases following the shot. The head of the Government Vaccination Advisory Board says that there were a few very unusual and troubling cases. France is among many EU members, including Germany and Italy, suspending the vaccine shot. Meantime, safety experts from the World Health Organization are set to hold a meeting to discuss the reported side effect of AstraZeneca vaccine. The European Medicine Agency is also carrying out a review stating that the benefits of the jabs outweigh the risks. AstraZeneca insists the vaccine is safe and that it has no link with the reported blood clots. The number of COVID deaths in Europe is inching closer to 1 million, underscoring the urgency of the vaccine push. Now, Iran has reported more than 8,000 new coronavirus cases and 97 more related deaths. The health ministry says 889 people from those contracted the disease over the past day have been hospitalized. Over 1.5 million people have recovered from the contagion. The number of new cases and deaths in Iran has sharply dropped since November, when the country imposed tough restrictions to curb the pandemic. However, officials have sounded the alarm over the declining rate of public observation of health protocols, as well as the spread of the more contagious variants of the virus. Iranians have also been urged to refrain from traveling during the upcoming New Year's holidays. So far, the country has registered more than 1.7 million infections and 61,000 deaths. And this is while Iran has launched the human and clinical trial of another domestically developed vaccine for COVID-19. The inoculum is developed by the Defense Ministry and is named Fakhra. Salman Kujuri reports.
Iran has unveiled its fourth domestically developed COVID-19 vaccine. The new jab, called Fakhra, has been developed by the Defense Ministry. It is named after the head of the Ministry's Organization of Defensive Innovation and Research, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was assassinated in November 2020. The first phase of the human trial of the vaccine kicked off at the presence of Defense Minister Brigadier General Amir Hatami and Health Minister Said Namaki. The first volunteer was the son of martyr Fakhrizadeh.
The vaccine has been produced using domestic scientific achievements and technologies. The Fakhra inoculum is the fourth coronavirus vaccine developed by Iran. Iran has been unable to procure medicines and medical equipment from abroad to tackle coronavirus due to U.S. sanctions. But the country has not just relied on imports to tackle the disease, as it has produced four coronavirus vaccines so far.
The Iranian nation should know it well that the Defense Ministry is fully prepared to defend the country against any sort of attacks, and now the biological field is one of such war fronts. We are fully ready to counter the threats in this field as well. That's why we have developed a new vaccine called Fakhra, which can become operational and can be mass-produced perhaps in 3 months.
According to developers of the vaccine, its safety and effectiveness has been proven after laboratory tests on more than 650 animals from different species of mice, rabbits, pigs, and monkeys.
The research and development process on the COVID-19 vaccine began in March 2020 by collecting 35,000 samplings of the virus, from which 30 samples appropriate for initial vaccine seeds were isolated and cultivated. The virus identification tests were then carried out and the final vaccine candidate entered the trial production phase in June 2020. The vaccine then moved forward with other phases, including animal tests, and was finally given to Iran's Food and Drug Administration, which, after some modifications, licensed the vaccine to move with the clinical trial.
In addition to Fakhra, Iran has developed three other vaccines, which are passing their human trials. The COVID jabs include COVID-1 barricades developed by experts at the headquarters for executing the order of Imam Khomeini, Razi Kovpars developed by the Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, and finally, Soberana 2, which is the result of the cooperation of Iran's Pasteur Institute and Cuba's Finlay Vaccine Institute.
According to Iranian officials, with the beginning of the first phase of human trial of Fakhra vaccine, Iran will soon become one of the biggest producers of vaccine in the world. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
In other news, Turkey and Greece have started another round of direct talks in a bid to de-escalate tensions over a long-standing maritime dispute in the eastern Mediterranean. The so-called exploratory talks are being held in Athens. Greece says it will discuss only the demarcation of maritime zones and won't raise the issue of sovereign rights. However, Turkey is saying all issues should be tackled. The two sides are seeking common ground over their territorial claims before a European Union summit later this month, when bloc leaders are expected to discuss the issue. Ankara is at loggerheads with Athens over an energy-rich area in the Mediterranean. Tensions escalated last year after Turkey sent an exploration vessel to the contested waters. The NATO chief says that European members of the military alliance had increased their defense spending in 2020, despite the economic pain inflicted by the coronavirus pandemic. Jens Stoltenberg says that there was a 4% increase in spending among European allies. Overall military spending by the 30 members of the alliance reached $1 billion last year, with the U.S. accounting for more than 70%. Over the past couple of years, European nations have faced pressure from Washington to boost their spending to a target threshold of 2% of their GDP. Former U.S. President Donald Trump accused the Europeans of taking advantage of American generosity. New President Joe Biden is also expected to remain firm on getting Europe to pay more. Tens of thousands of Bolivians have hit the streets in major cities to protest the detention of ex-president Jeanine Áñez. Protests were held in the capital La Paz and several more cities. Áñez was arrested on Saturday over the 2019 ouster of then-President Evo Morales. She's been sentenced to 4 months of pretrial detention over charges of terrorism, sedition, and conspiracy. Áñez has rejected the charges. She took over as caretaker president after Morales left Bolivia in November 2019. Morales did so after the army forced him to resign following protests against his re-election. He returned to Bolivia months ago after his party won elections in October last year. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به حق تعالی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, we're with you with another episode in our series. In a few episodes, we're going to make you familiar with Imam Khomeini's behavior during the period in which Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi was the source of emulation. Although Imam Khomeini was a prominent scholar himself, he highly respected Grand Ayatollah Hossein Burujerdi, as he wanted to keep the unity and solidarity of scholars and students of seminaries. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Grand Ayatollah Hussein Gurujadi was one of the great students of Akhund Khorasani. He took the helm of leadership of Qom Seminary just a few years after the demise of Grand Ayatollah Sheikh Abdul Karim Ha'iri Yazdi upon the invitation of three famous scholars of Qom: Ayatollah Hujjat, Ayatollah Khansari, and Ayatollah Sadr. Grand Ayatollah Burujadi became the source of emulation after the passing away of Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Abul Hassan Isfahani. He played a significant role in the development of the Qom Seminary, and a number of seminary students increased considerably during his management. Grand Ayatollah Burujadi made great effort in proximity of Islamic sects and sent his representative to Egypt for membership at Dar al-Taghrib in Cairo. The famous fatwa of Al-Azhar University's Sheikh Shaltut on recognition of Shia school of thought among Sunni sects was the result of Grand Ayatollah Hussein Burujadi's endeavors. This great source of emulation sent preachers to different parts of Iran and abroad, set up scientific and religious centers, built mosques and madrasas in Iran and various countries, and ordered the Pahlavi regime's education ministry to add religious teachings in the course in the school curriculum for all school pupils. Grand Ayatollah Burujadi's presence at Qom Seminary played a very important role in the prosperity of this place, and it was Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, who played a key role in bringing Grand Ayatollah Burujadi from his hometown of Burujerd to Qom. Late Ayatollah Sayyid Hassan Badala said on this, "When Ayatollah Burujadi was sick and had to come to Shahrereh, just south of Tehran, to spend his recovery at hospital, Imam Khomeini visited him several times and asked him to come to Qom. The Imam said on this, "With the coming of Grand Ayatollah Burujadi to Qom, the seminary will be saved from the difference among the sources of emulation and their proponents." Imam Khomeini's younger son, late Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini, wrote, "Among the things that the Imam considered vital for scientific life of the seminary after the demise of Grand Ayatollah Ha'iri Yazdi was the presence of Ayatollah Burujadi in Qom. Thus, the Imam tried a lot for his residence in Qom, and when the late Ayatollah Burujadi had come to Firuzabadi Hospital in Shahrereh, south of Tehran, for surgery, according to my mother, the Imam sometimes wrote 50 to 60 letters to the scholars across the country to ask Mr. Burujadi to come to Qom. Finally, due to the effort, incessant efforts of scholars, particularly the Imam, the late Ayatollah Burujadi was satisfied with residing in Qom." Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini very much respected Grand Ayatollah Burujadi. For this reason, he used to participate in his classes, although at the time he was an outstanding scholar himself and his classes were full of students. Late Ayatollah Muhammad Ba'izzadeh Khorasani said in this regard, "Imam Khomeini, after finishing his own class, would attend a class of great source of emulation, Grand Ayatollah Burujadi, along with his students. This is whilst the Imam had 400 to 500 students in his jurisprudence class." Martyr Ayatollah Fazlullah Mahallati said, "The Imam used to attend a class of Grand Ayatollah Burujadi. I think this attending was not because of he needed the class, but rather because of the respect he had for Grand Ayatollah Burujadi." Thank you. Ayatollah Ali Panah Ishtihadi recounts an anecdote about Imam Khomeini's great respect and reverence towards Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi. Ayatollah Ishtihadi says, "The Imam used to attend the class of Ayatollah Burujerdi and would respect him much more than a student respects his instructor. Sometimes he would accompany Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi right up to his house. Dear friends, in view of the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, besides his great scientific position, had a very firm character that reduced the oppression of the ruling system and strengthened the role of the clergy against tyranny." Ayatollah Mahallati said in this regard, "After the demise of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, we were at the Imam's service for a week in Imamzada Qasim. He said, 'I insisted on Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi coming to Qom was that before his coming, there were three scholars like Ayatollah Khonsari, Ayatollah Hujjat, and Ayatollah Sadr. But there was not an eminent person to be considered as the power for the clergy. Moreover, the comprehensiveness of Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi's knowledge didn't exist in others, because he had the spirit that he could rule over these rulers. Once Bakhtiar had come there, and the ulama were sitting there, too. Bakhtiar was sitting on the step whilst laying his legs. Late Ayatollah Burujerdi told him, "Sit politely in the presence of ulama." This spirit was not like among other ulama. And since this spirit was in the late Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi, I said to him to exercise his power to form an Islamic government so that we could repress the regime or at least control it." Dear friends, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, had decided to bring Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi to Qom many years. Late Ayatollah Sultani was quoted as saying, "During the period of the leadership of Sayyid Abul Hasan Isfahani, sometimes the Imam would ask me about Grand Ayatollah Burujerdi to know what kind of a person he was. I told him, he doesn't listen to government officials. He's very much independent." The Imam said happily, "Bravo, a clergy should be like this." In our next program, we shall continue this discussion. Until then, goodbye and God bless.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of Islamic Upbringing. And we are here to discuss some very important and practical issues regarding the upbringing of our children, especially our teenagers. If you remember, we have discussed so many important issues in our previous episodes, Today also we have Islamic scholar Mrs. Razia Batul Najafi. She is preaching, I think, around 25 years in so many countries around the globe. She has written so many books, and she has specialized, you know, from the Islamic seminary of Qom, Hawza Ilmiya Qom. So, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and welcome to our show. If our listeners remember, in our last episode, we were talking about the very important principle of upbringing, the ignorance, you know, ignoring our sons' or our daughters' mistakes, which is called in Arabic, taghaful, as if we don't know what has happened and what they have done. So today, we are sharing with our listeners another important principle, which is called rifq, to be friend with your children, with your son or daughter. You know, if you become a very friendly parent, definitely this will provide you a very, very good base to discuss with your, you know, children, with your son, with your daughter. Whatever problem they have in their life, they can come and talk to you. But if you are not friendly with them, then definitely they will not share with you. So this is a very important principle.
Exactly. I would love to start with this amazing hadith that لكل شيء قفل وقفل الإيمان الرفق. Like each and every item and things in this world has a qufl, means like a protector, yeah? And the protector of our faith is to be polite. Look at the Islam, how beautiful this Islam is. And unfortunately, we sometimes, you know, if we want to become a very good and practicing Muslim, we want to practice a bit harshness. You know, we think, oh, because I know so much Quran and Hadith, so I have to be a bit, you know, rude and serious and dull and dumb. But what actually the Islam is, the genuine Islam, you know, the beautiful Islam lies in these amazing principles and ahadith that لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ قُفْلٍ. If you truly want to protect your faith, you cannot live without, you know, the beautiful politeness in your tongue, in your, you know, relationship, because the life is based on relationship, like your relationship with Allah, your relationship with, you know, all your friends. And then when it comes to family and to children, then you have to show the absolute politeness and your amazing manners towards them.
So politeness is like magnet, you know. If you are polite with people, so they will be attracted by your politeness.
No doubt, yeah.
So likewise, if you are polite with your children, with your sons, with your daughters, definitely they will feel more comfortable with you. And this is a very, very good way to interact with your children.
Definitely. But I'm sure many parents, whenever I talk to them, you know, about politeness, they say, it doesn't work in my house. You know why? Because if we are polite and very gentle with our children, they don't listen to us. You know, they go beyond their limits. They have so many objections. They can't understand, you know, because in my last 20 years experiences, unfortunately, I have observed a lot. So what do you say if some parents comes and they ask this question?
Definitely, being polite is not, you know, suddenly you become polite. You know, from the beginning, if you are polite, you are respecting your children, your teenagers, you know, you have provided that beautiful, polite atmosphere at home. So definitely you will get, you will see the fruits, you will see the result, you know. But if you are, you know, very serious and very rude from the beginning, but in the teenage you want to become polite and you want to see the result suddenly, which will not work out.
Sometimes, you know, the kids, they laugh, you know, they get shocked that what happened to our parents, how they have shifted and jumped from one behavior to another behavior.
Yeah, inshallah, after a short break, we will continue this beautiful discussion.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, welcome back to your own program, Islamic Upbringing, from IRIB English Radio. So we are discussing another beautiful principle in upbringing our teenagers especially, that is to be friend with your teenagers.
Exactly.
As you said, being friendly does not mean that, you know, for one day, one week, one year, you become friend. You know, you have to provide the base. From the base, if you are friendly with your toddler, with your small children, you know, as they grew up in this peaceful and very polite, friendly atmosphere, definitely in teenage also, they will become polite and they will become friendly. So what do you say?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I definitely, absolutely, 100% agree with you, because, you know, this in Arabic we say rifq, rafiq, yeah? This is the beautiful name of Allah, the title of Allah, tabaraka wa ta'ala. Like we say, ya rafiqa man la rafiqa la. And look at the importance of this absolute quality which we have to adopt in our daily life, especially with our children, with our teens. The saying from our Prophet Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says, "Amarani Rabbi bi mudarati nas, yeah, kama amarani bi ada'i al-fara'id." Like this, mudarat means to compromise, you know, to be gentle whenever you face some problems, you know, something comes against your, you know, taste. And if you're just, you know, be polite, be very, very patient in that area, in that time. So Prophet is saying, Allah, yeah, my Lord has ordered me, yeah, this is the command of Allah, to be very polite and to compromise with people. The order, the emphasis, you know, the way Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala is asking for mudarat, for be gentle, is like the way Allah is asking to fulfill your duties and whatever is incumbent on you. You know, the importance of amazing akhlaq is like the importance of wajibah, whatever is faraiz and wajib. Yeah,
jazakallah. It's again time for a short break. Inshallah, we will see our listeners after the short break.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, encourage your sons in their childhood to learn etiquette, so that in their grown-up age they can be the joy of your eyes.
Dear listeners, welcome back. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing from IRIB English Radio. So we are here to discuss some very, very important principles regarding upbringing our teenagers. So we were discussing the very beautiful principle, rifq, to be friend, to be polite with your teenager. So definitely, if you are polite, if you are friendly with your son, with your daughter, so when they feel that you are friendly and polite, so they will feel that there is no distance. They can share with you their own problems. They can come to you and discuss their each and every single problem.
100%, yes.
Rather than going to their own friends and, you know, to outside, to social media and look for, you know, friends there and to discuss their own issues there. So which provides a great chance for you to have your own child in front of you and to provide him with good guidelines, which Islam also emphasized a lot, our Aimmah Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, with their children, with their companions, with their, you know, people, they always
were very polite. Beautiful sense of humor. You know, nowadays the biggest, I think, challenge with which our children, our teens, they have, you know, we have to listen to them also. You know, if we ask them, what is the problem? You know, what kind of parents do you want? So literally, usually they say our parents are
dry,
yeah, very dull, boring, you know. They don't know how to laugh with us. They don't know how to, you know, involve in our, you know, like entertainment. We have so many halal entertainments. So I think this is the time where we have to see only the limits of Sharia. Like whatever Allah is allowing us, if that is halal, we have to straight away that kind of entertainment. Yeah. We have to do it, you know, apply it. Enjoy it. Have a fun with your children. And don't say, oh, you know, it doesn't suit me and no, it's not my age, you know, to go to play or to do whatever the children are doing. Yeah, what do you say?
Yeah, definitely. We have to change again our mind.
Yeah.
We are, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, we have gap with them.
Minimum
so we
20.
We are thinking according to our own upbringing, according to our own atmosphere where we have been brought up. So we should not implement the same rules, the same upbringing rules with them. You know, we have to be like them, you know, like lively, like friendly. We have to, you know, share jokes with them, do sometimes, you know, play with them sometimes.
Yeah,
because they keep distance from us. Why? Because we are not lively with them, we are not friendly with them, we are not laughing
and
with them.
And sometimes we have to see ourselves on the mirror, that how frowny, you know, our face is when we go to them. And we are saying the same repeated thing. Like, for example, have you done your homework? Have you prayed? You know, why your room is not tidy? It's so repeated, boring, you know, statement, which unfortunately our children are keep hearing.
Yeah. So a very golden rule is to be like them, you know.
They like games, physical games on screen sometimes. You know, you can have a beautiful cinema time. Like, just make some popcorns and sit with your children and watch whatever is halal.
Unfortunately, again, we are running out of time. Inshallah, we will benefit from your beautiful thoughts in our upcoming episodes. Thank you, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. If you have any suggestion, comments, or any idea you want to share with us, you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And you can visit our website also, parstoday.com. Until our next episode, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The absence of charges for the officers who gunned down Breonna Taylor was an injustice. The treatment of protesters in Louisville and across the U.S. was an injustice. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jake Johnson, writer. This article is published under the heading, Protesters and Lawmakers Demand Justice for Taylor 1 Year Later. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Hundreds of Americans rallied in downtown Louisville, Kentucky, and marched through the streets on Saturday, March 13th, to mark the one-year anniversary of the killing of Taylor, a 26-year-old black woman who was gunned down in her own home by three police officers, none of whom have been charged for her death. This is not a celebration. This is the anniversary of something that should not have happened. One speaker said at a Louisville event where Taylor's family, racial justice activists, and ordinary members of the community gathered to mourn the loss of Breonna and demand action from lawmakers and police departments beyond the small-scale reforms that followed the March 2020 killing. While Louisville in June banned no-knock raids of the kind that led to Taylor's death, local activists say far more needs to be done to hold the officers responsible for Taylor's death accountable, rein in law enforcement abuses, and remedy long-standing racial injustices. But the Kentucky state legislature, controlled by Republicans, is currently more focused on passing legislation to criminalize insulting police officers. This is about justice. This is about our power to change this world for our children. For my daughter, Sadegar Reynolds, president of the Louisville Urban League, told a crowd of demonstrators on Saturday, March 13th. This is so we can make sure that not another person dies at the hands of police. Kentucky State Democratic Representative Atika Scott, the lead sponsor of legislation that would ban no-knock raids statewide, told NPR ahead of Saturday's events that in the 365 days since Taylor's killing, justice has not been served. Folks on the front lines are very clear that they are continuing to call for all of the officers involved in Breonna Taylor's murder to be fired, arrested, and charged for her murder, said Scott. They have not wavered from those demands. Two officers connected to the raid on Taylor's home, including the detective who investigators found fired the shot that killed Taylor, were terminated earlier this year. Brett Hankison, another officer involved in the raid, was fired last June and later charged with three counts of wanton endangerment for shooting into an apartment unit near Taylor's. In the wake of Taylor's death, Louisville banned no-knock warrants and set new guidelines for police raids. Even if Congress passes the Justice in Policing Act, states and localities would be left to pass their own reforms, as a few are already doing. Hundreds of protesters, meanwhile, have been arrested at demonstrations demanding justice for Taylor and accountability for officers who killed her. I can't believe it's a year later and we're still just asking people to do the right thing, Tamika Palmer, Taylor's mother, said in an interview earlier this week. Not to say all officers are bad, but there is no accountability. Lawmakers at the national level also mark the anniversary of Taylor's killing on social media. Today marks 365 days of injustice. Breonna Taylor's murder was an injustice. The ensuing cover-up was an injustice. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron's mockery of a grand jury hearing was an injustice, tweeted Representative Cori Bush. Representative Cori Bush added, "The absence of charges for the officers who gunned down Breonna was an injustice. The treatment of protesters in Louisville and across the U.S. was an injustice. That people no longer say Taylor's name as often as they should is an injustice," Bush continued. "A black woman was murdered by the U.S. police in her home in the middle of the night, and nothing has fundamentally changed. That's why we won't stop saying her name. That's why we have to legislate in defense of black lives in Congress."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina wa maulana Abil Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. In continuing our discussion on the beautiful and very lengthy tradition of Imam Kazim alayhi salam to his close companion Hisham, we have reached the 31st section, and you know, we are coming to the end of this beautiful tradition. So the Imam in this 31st section quotes three other Imams. So as we saw in our previous episodes, the Imam quotes Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. Then he quotes Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam. And in the final part, he quotes Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, Imam Zainul Abideen alayhi salam. And in this part is very beautiful. There is like a cause and effect type of thing that the Imam is showing here. That if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen, for example. So the Imam alayhi salam, quoting Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, says that the company of the righteous fosters righteousness. So being with good people, you know, will enable you to yourself become a good person. And then the Imam continues and says, to observe and to copy the discipline of the scholars increases the intellect. That's a very important point here. Obedience to just rulers perfects human dignity. Investing one's wealth perfects one's humanity. So again, we see there are certain actions here, and the result is something that is not physical. If you want to put it, it is like a metaphysical or a spiritual result, that something we cannot see. So therefore we can understand why certain people will find these things difficult to comprehend. That because you are doing something that is physical, for example, you are sitting with somebody, but the results you are getting from it, you know, is not physical, it is metaphysical. Similarly, you are giving money somewhere, but you're not seeing a profit in this world, you are seeing something else in the next world, or something that is dealing with your soul or with your intellect. And the Imam continues and says, to guide in good faith, that person who seeks counsel is to fulfill our duty to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for having blessed us with sound judgment. A very beautiful saying this, that when you assist somebody else, you are actually performing a responsibility and the right of that, you know, faculty that you have been given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then the Imam in the last part mentions, to refrain from bothering others stems from the strength of the intellect. Doing so results in one's ease in this world and in the hereafter. Basically, don't trouble other people. Other people won't trouble you, and you'll have a life of ease and a life of tranquility. Inshallah. Until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
The debate.
The war in Syria is now 10 years.